Accession number 18507, Reel 2.
John Napper, Reel 2. You were just saying that you were in Shrivenham in spring.
Yes, Shrivenham throughout, I think it was February, March, April, May, I think I was at Shrivenham. Then to London, to Barking. And then it must have been, I suppose, around about October of 41 that we went to Wales. And these are very approximate dates because, you know, I'm just doing it from memory. And we had this training in Wales, which I say was very exciting and very nice. I enjoyed it. And then we went to embarkation leave, and then up to Liverpool, on to the regiment was put on a boat called the Oranse, which was I can't remember, piano, I think, I'm not sure. Anyway, it was a very nice boat for the officers. It wasn't such fun for the men, I'm afraid. They had to be down in the holds. But it was a funny journey out because we left Liverpool and on board there was a regiment of Seaforth Highlanders, and on the prow of the boat, the piper, and as the boat started to move away from the quay, he started to play these laments. And it was very moving and beautiful. And he played until we lost sight of land. And it was, they were a very nice lot. Third Seaforth, I think they were, I'm not sure. But they were a very good lot. Anyway, we set off and we went off and we went down into, the convoy rendezvoused around Rockall and saw this great rock sticking out of the Atlantic. It's quite impressive. And then we set off south, and we'd been, I suppose, probably about a day and a half out of, away from Rockall. And suddenly we were this huge convoy. It was the biggest convoy that up to that time had left the shores of these islands. And all of a sudden, Fokker Wolfs were spotted on the horizon. So the whole convoy had to split up. And I think about three ships, there was one I was on and two others, set off due west. And we wandered around the Atlantic. We were wandering around for days. And we saw something of land on one occasion, which I was told was the coast of Brazil, but I don't know.
Did you know where you were going at this stage?
Oh, we knew we were going to Durban and in South Africa. Then after a time, we were still pushing around in the Atlantic, and then suddenly we docked for a day in Freetown, Sierra Leone. And stayed there for a few hours, just I suppose to refuel or what, I don't know why. It was maybe a night, day and a night. Then we set off again, we passed St. Helena, and we came down to South Africa and went round the Cape. We didn't land at the Cape, and we sort of made our way amongst the coelacanths from Cape Town to Durban, where we docked. And in Durban, it was really excellent. It was my first experience of subtropical. And then the first thing I did, once I had a moment to get out into the town, I went and bought myself two avocado pears, a bottle of Cape brandy, and a pint of cream. And I went down onto the beach with a little friend, and we drank it all and ate it all.
How was the reception by the South African civilians?
Oh, it was lovely. Absolutely couldn't have been nicer. I mean, it just, in Durban, I mean, it really couldn't have been nicer. I mean, they were so welcoming and so, it really was nice. Really nice.
How long were you in Durban?
About 5 or 6 weeks. Because the regiment was supposed to be going off to invade Madagascar, take it from the French. I'm jolly glad we didn't do that, because when I went to live in France, that would have been held against me, even though I would have had no say in the matter. But we set sail, and we sailed up to Bombay, and in Bombay, we arrived in Bombay in the afternoon, just after lunch, if I remember rightly, and the regiment was marched off the boat in full gear, and we did a 2-hour route march around Bombay, showing the flag, because apparently there had been a bit of unrest there. And so we had to march around Bombay with our band going full blast and flags waving and the rest of it. And then we went up to, we were taken up to the big fort. I forget what it's called. It's a famous fort above Bombay. And we were billeted there for the night. But about 5:30 in the morning, we were all pulled out of our bunks, and we had to go and parade in front of the head boy of the fort, whose name again, some general, I think. And there we had this tremendous great sort of military display, we were all a bit chocker of it, because we knew that we'd been marching around Bombay the day before and not having had a very comfortable night. And then after this display, we all marched back onto the boat we'd come up on. We came up on the Ile de France, that we were marched back to the docks, and we boarded the city of Paris and went down to Colombo. And that was one of the most marvelous. Arriving in Colombo and arriving at Ceylon and seeing this distant little bit of land, and the smell of the spices and the smell of the tropics just coming off the shore, it was absolutely magnificent, because it was the first time I'd ever been in the tropics. I'd no idea what it was going to be like, and this marvelous heat. And then we were billeted in a place called Havelock Town. And then there was no war on in Ceylon at the time.
What was your role, the unit's role at the time?
Well, it was still heavy anti-aircraft. I mean, that was what the what our official role was, but as it was no war, it was we stayed, I think, 2 or 3 weeks in Colombo, in Havelock Town, and then my battery was sent up to the jungle outside Trincomalee. I don't know how many miles from Trincomalee we were, probably about 10 miles out. Trincomalee was one of the great ports, especially during the war. It was of immense value, marvelous port, gigantic. And we had to build a gun site out in the jungle, which was quite exciting. And life in the jungle, from a young lad coming out of England, never having been in the tropics, life in the jungle was absolutely the most exciting thing imaginable. All the birds and the plants, not many flowers, but some, and the heat. And we had to dig a well because there was no water. Headquarters used to send us water every day. And we got a Tamil water diviner to find out where we could dig for water, which we did. We started digging. And as we got down, I used to go down with the boys just to encourage them because they didn't particularly like being so far down. But once, I remember, this extraordinary thing happened. It must have been just before midday, and I'd gone down. We'd gone down about 15, 16 feet, and I looked up, and I could see the planet in the sky, in spite of the intense brightness outside. The well shaft was acting as a telescope, and that impressed me very greatly.
What were the relationships like with the locals?
It was very good. Actually, subsequently, it got extremely good with me. My other battery chap, Allenby, his name was, Bill Allenby. Nice man, much older than I was the youngest. By this time, I was the youngest in the regiment. And most of the others were elderly Liverpool stockbrokers. But I did have one young friend who came later, Ken Lowney, who was very nice. And he and I used to race our motor bicycles, because Ceylon was a wonderful place with long straight roads. And one could touch 70 miles an hour on his motor bicycles in those days. I had a Norton and he had an Ariel. But what happened then? I got ill, I think. I got bitten by a spider. That's right, I got bitten by a spider on my elbow. Because we had to sleep under mosquito nets. And on a tiny little camp bed. And I could only sleep on it by lying on my tummy with my arms like that. And of course they pressed against the mosquito net. And I woke up one night and the moon was coming into the tent. It was in a tent. And I saw this spider run up the side of the mosquito net, but it had been feeding on my arm.
How big was it?
About that sort of size.
So about the size of a...
About the size of a... What shall we say? A little bit bigger than a draft piece. It was a nasty spider because it put me in hospital for 2 months. And I reported sick, and my MO said, you better go off to hospital. So I was taken to the hospital in Trincomalee, military hospital, and which had just been staffed by people coming out from, staff coming out from England. And I reported sick and said I'd been bitten by a spider. And they started sort of cracking jokes. Oh, bitten by a spider, have you? It's lucky you weren't bitten by a snake, isn't it? Everybody who comes out from England thinks they've been bitten by something. But in point of fact, I had been, and my arm began to go absolutely really bad. It began to become purple. And the glands under my armpit all became like a bunch of grapes. Fortunately, an Indian general actually from the, what do they call it, Indian Army Medical, whatever it was anyway, he came and was doing his rounds and, and talking to the patients. And when I told him what it was, and he said, yes, I think you're perfectly right, I think it was. So then they put me on to M&B. There was still no penicillin. They put me on to M&B, And this M&B had the most ghastly side effects, suicidal side effects, really suicidal. But
it acted as a depressant.
Oh, beyond all belief. I mean, absolutely ghastly, ghastly depressant. And they gave me that, but it very nearly made me want to commit suicide, but it did cure my arm. So that was all right.
Can I ask about a little bit about the role of the battery and its organisation?
Yes.
While you were in Ceylon, but also a little bit in England as
yes.
well. How was the battery organised?
The battery was, there were two batteries to my regiment. 155, this was 52nd Heavy Anti-Aircraft Regiment. And one, the battery 155, and mine was 274. 247. Either 274 or 247. 274, I think. Yes, 274. Anyway, there would be a colonel in charge of the regiment, and with his adjutant and his staff. And then there would be, each battery would be commanded by a major, and again with his adjutant and his staff. And then the battery would be divided into sections, and each section had two officers in charge of the section. I'm trying to think how many sections we had. I think we had four sections, but I'm not quite, that I would like to bet on. Two sections. My own section was quite enough for me to handle. And then there would be a couple of sergeants, 4 or 5 bombardiers, and 32 men in the section. And they were wonderful. They were absolutely marvellous. They were all Londoners, and all Cockneys, and the humour was absolute. Even in the worst part of the Blitz, one would hear one of them, I remember, he was called Little Titch. He was only about 4 foot high, and he was on the gun, one of the gun crew. And with bombs flying around everywhere, you'd suddenly hear this great Cockney, some completely dotty remark. Everybody burst out laughing. Wonderful. No, they were a great, great, great crowd.
And what was your role as the officer?
Just in charge of the battery, and there to take responsibility for an organisation. And I don't think the ideal soldier, because I spent so much of my time in a sort of dream. I didn't really know what was going on. Not like I should have done, but I enjoyed it, and people seem to they put up with me. It's funny, artist Johnny coming in. And then what happened, I came out of hospital, and the regiment by this time was stationed at a place called Hunupitia, which was the regiment was my battery, was stationed at Hunupitia, which was about 20 miles, I suppose, out of Colombo. On a great, we had to build, the jobs all the time were building gun sites, and we had to build this gun site on a great big flat area that had been a great snake pit at one time. There were literally thousands of snakes, some of them absolutely deadly. And it was curious. It was very nice, and there were, people were nice. But I had to employ a group of Sinhalese to help us with this clearing this land, and I got six Sinhalese, which I found in the local village, and they were so nice. We paid them 1 rupee a week.
How did you go about building the gun site?
Oh, it was, first of all, we had been really actually, by the time it was being ready to be built, I'd already left, because this is where the war becomes surrealist. That what whilst I was there, it was a question just of clearing the land, flattening it, making places where the guns could eventually be put, and generally sort of, you know, preparing the land to make a gun site. And that's what it was. Come to the exciting part. We were building this gun site, and I got dysentery. And I was taken off to hospital with this dysentery. It wasn't amoebic dysentery, which is the bad one. It was what they call bacillic dysentery, which, if the other one's bad, this was ghastly. It was absolutely dreadful. One felt so ill, and this endless, endless, you know, la chasse, as the French call it. That I went into hospital, and in Mount Lavinia, which is just to the south of Colombo, and I was lying there in my bed a couple of days after I arrived, and the CEO of the hospital, who was Brigadier Dunn, tremendously nice man, he came in and saw me, and one had one's name at the end of the bed. And he said, "John Napper," he said, "are you any relation of John Napper, the artist?" I looked at him and I said, "Well, I am an artist." And he said, "Did you have a picture in the Royal Academy 2 years ago?" And I said, "Yes, I did, actually. A little landscape." And he said, "I bought it." Extraordinary piece of coincidence. And so that was very nice. And as I began to get better, he asked me, there was one very big ward in this. It used to be St. Thomas's School, and it had been taken over by the medical corps, turned into a hospital for the war. And there was one of the big classrooms, very big classroom, with a huge, great, empty wall in it. And he asked me to do a mural decoration on that wall. So I did this mural decoration. Then it took about 2 or 3 weeks to do it. And I had, in the meantime, before this, I had become very friendly with a very marvelous person who was Major Barrow, David Barrow, who was Assistant Military Secretary, and who came from a great military family. But he was a very, very fine artist himself. And when we had any leave, we'd meet and go and do some drawing in the town. And anyway, after I came out of hospital, I learned that Brigadier Dunn and David Barrow and Brigadier Leslie, who was my brigadier being in charge of all the artillery on the island, had come to the conclusion that I would be better employed as a war artist than as a soldier.
Was that in an official capacity?
Yes. I mean, it was official. It was official for Ceylon Command. Admiral Leighton was commander-in-chief, and he approved, and everybody approved. They all thought it was a very nice idea. And so did I. And so then, I saw, as there was no war in Ceylon, I painted a portrait of the commander-in-chief, I painted a portrait of the governor, I painted a portrait of various of old Senanaika, who was sort of head Sinhalese official, prime minister, I think he was. And then a number of soldiers and sailors and airmen. And then I used to wander around in the island painting gun sites and airdromes. And then if I wanted to, I just had to ring up either the Navy or the Air Force. And you know, if I got bored, I suddenly thought, well, I'd like to go off into the Pacific. And I'd ring up the Naval Office and say, is anything going out? And I want to go into the Pacific. And they said, well, the Dutch submarine, one of the O-boats, was going out. And so I went down to see them and asked them if I'd go with them. And so I go off for a tour of duty out into the Pacific in one of these Dutch submarines. It was absolutely marvellous.
How was that? How did you feel in being in a submarine?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I really loved it. And even on one occasion, when the submarine was spotted by a Japanese plane, which started to dive bomb, not dive bomb, it's to drop depth charges. And we had to sink to the bottom of the ocean. And the drill on board the submarine, when that happens, all engines are turned off, everything's turned off, and of course the air supply is all turned off, so there's no oxygen coming. And you have to lie on your belly on the deck with your head on your hands like that, because that's the way you breathe the least. And if it goes on for longer than an hour and a half, the captain just got, you're not allowed to speak or anything, it's total silence. And it really is silent. And the captain then calls out, up spirits. And the youngest member of the crew has to get up, go to the rum store, and bring out the rum bottles. And that's passed around, and you're allowed one swig of rum. And then that's put away.
How did you get on with the Dutch crew?
Oh, they were absolutely delightful. Some of them could speak English. The captain could speak very good English. In fact, I think he was married to an English girl. But they were tremendously nice, tremendously nice. And the boat was, you know, it was so clean. And all submarines were. I went on an English one, a British one, when I went to, because this war artist business, well, I went out after all that. I had 2 months out in the east coast of the island, where I just lived with a Sinhalese family for 2 months. I never put on European clothes for 2 months. We lived, it was a fishing family, and they lived right on the beach. I mean, the sea was as far away as the window. And this
little about 6 feet.
Yes. And the